Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 21st of June, recording at 10:22 p.m., and that's British Summer Time, of course. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's start with a look at the week, and it's been a somewhat turbulent week, as you'll be well aware. And the main reason for that is because some uncertainty and nervousness over the Fed's plans regarding ending the or slowing the quantitative easing program, which has been outlined calmly and clearly, I feel, by Mr. Bernanke. But we also know that a lot of people have been speculating in the markets as well as investing in the markets and riding on the coattails of Mr. Bernanke. And so this has created some uncertainty and anxiety in the markets. I think this is an event that Fuller Money subscribers have certainly been forewarned of. Owen and I have often mentioned this this year, that while we were in a bull market, and probably still are, at least I would, I'll take away the probably. I mean, we're still in a bull market, although we are also certainly clearly in a corrective phase for stock markets. But we've used a number of adjectives, including convulsive and turbulent, when talking about the conditions that would apply as it became apparent that the Fed was winding down its quantitative easing program. And this patch is going to really last with us for a while, for I think at least a few months, and not to alarm anyone, but it could last beyond that. It could last for a year or two even. That's a guess, of course, because we'll have to see how events are actually unfolding. But we see this as very much the final stages of what has been this overall valuation contraction cycle that really began back in 1999. And to peer further ahead, we also are on record as saying on a number of occasions that we felt we would see clear evidence that a new secular bull market was underway before the end of this decade. Well, let's see where we stand here right now. Now, if we look at the Standard & Poor's 500 index, which has had a pullback, I think, of about 6.5%, well, that's pretty small. And it had two setbacks in 2012, which weren't that big, but they were bigger than the 6.5% pullback. It had a pullback in 2011, which just went beyond the 20%, which most people use as a definition of a bear market. I'm not happy with that definition of a bear market, because you're going to have an awful lot of bear markets with these 20% corrections these days. As I say, that is what we saw back in 2011. And then in 2010, we had another correction that was close to twice the size of this one that we have seen so far, at least twice the size of this one that we've seen. So my point is, four previous corrections during the bull market in the S&P. So I don't feel that this move at 6.5 to the downside is over. It's occurring from a higher level. It's occurring following a very good run upwards that began in mid-November. We know that the move to the upside also expanded valuations somewhat. So the market was not cheap up near the highs. It wasn't grossly overextended. We didn't have a big acceleration to the upside, but we were overextended relative to the moving average. Now, to mention or to make that point here once again, the 200-day moving average for the S&P currently stands at 1526 and rising. Now, the S&P closed tonight with a small gain at 1592. On the four previous setbacks that I referred to during the bull market that began in the second quarter of 2009, we saw the S&P pull back and break temporarily beneath its rising 200-day moving average. And it did it did that quite significantly in 2011 on that definition of a statistical, small statistical bear market. So my point is, with the S&P at 1592 right now, and the MA down at 1526, I certainly don't think that we have seen the end of this pullback, and I think there's a good chance that we will see it pull back to well, at least 1500 before we get a meaningful low. Now, that's certainly not the end of the world. And I think also there's good news associated with that, in that it will bring a number of shares that we like, but that had kind of moved away from buying territory during the early to middle stages of this rally to the upside. It'll bring them back into attractive areas, and that process is already taking place in markets. And of particular interest, have a look at Owen's review tonight of the dividend aristocrats. Now, that's a sector that For Money has liked for really quite some time, and I'm sure we will like it for quite some time in the future. But timing is everything, and you don't want to overpay for these things, and so they are becoming more interested and will continue to do so over the next few months, creating that additional buying opportunity for anyone who is interested in buying. Now, what I'm concerned about right now is that with leveraged positions, or investors who have leveraged positions in either stock markets and particularly bonds, I think that those are going to come under pressure. And I mentioned this yesterday, and I probably mentioned it earlier on as well. This is not a great time, I feel, to have leveraged positions. Markets are going to be too choppy. I think it's too risky, unnecessarily risky. So I would stay away from those, particularly in bond markets. I think that investors who are holding shares that we like, and more importantly that you like, then I think one can ride out this corrective phase. I've mentioned on so many occasions that in terms of a preferred strategy, we think it's better to be exiting stock markets when they're becoming overextended relative to rising 200-day moving averages. And we certainly were seeing that in April and May. And we do not like selling positions under pressure when the crowd is panicking out of markets. And the logic behind that is hopefully obvious, although it seems counterintuitive at the time, because when markets are going up, everything seems fine and people are all bullish and hopeful of still further gains. Well, that's a time when one can use a trailing stop if you don't want to preempt and sell into the strength. Now, what I will also mention here is that in terms of performance among various different stock markets, what we have seen is a significant underperformance of resources sectors, primarily the metals. And they are quite depressed, the metals and mining shares. That's, in my opinion, an oversold sector, but it's been out of favor for so long that I think it'll have a hard time pushing up here over the short term. But I think that when we next get a second wind in this bull market, I think we will see them pick up and possibly quite sharply. Certainly, that would require somewhat of a pickup in terms of global GDP growth, but I think we're also likely to see that, and hopefully, there will be some evidence of that possibly before the end of this year for some markets and in 2000 and 14 as well. If that's too optimistic and we don't see a pickup in growth, then the Fed will be coming back, whether it's led by Mr. Bernanke or Janet Yellen, his most likely replacement as the Fed chairman retires. Then we will be seeing more QE if the global economy has really slowed down closer to the end of the year. It's a possibility, but a minority possibility, in my in my opinion. Now, looking at other markets, the big danger area here is not so much stock markets. Stock markets are extremely volatile. We know that. That's always been the case. And when they get periods of persistent strength, as we see on as we see from time to time, and have seen on several occasions during this bull market of the last 4.5 years or more, then those periods of persistent strength are followed by some sharpish corrective phases overall. But in saying that, you know that, but in saying that, we feel that equities are really much more attractive than the main alternative choice, which of course is the bond markets, particularly the long-dated government bond markets. Now, there are of course traditional investors in those long-dated government bond markets, and they tend to be generally more conservative investors. And those investors, though, in this cycle have considerably increased their positions because first they were doing extremely well. And they became momentum moves with the help of the Fed's QE program, as you know. They were also joined by a lot of trend runners, momentum players, leveraged traders and investors who added trillions of dollars to this market. In running with the Fed, and they were happy to leverage up in these in this situation because as long as the Fed was buying, they felt they were safe. But the trouble is, there were also some people who felt that, well, actually, since a lot of people were planning to do that, it might not be a bad idea to start getting out a little bit early. And one chart that you may recall seeing that I last posted, I think on the 7th of June, is that Merrill Lynch 10-year U.S. Treasury total return chart. And when I posted it on the 7th of June, I was saying because we'd seen an upside failure and it was beginning to press, or not beginning, it was pressing the lower side of a clear trading range. and with the likelihood that it would break down, and that would represent unprecedented technical action this long government bond market of more than 30 years duration in a bull trend. Well, we have seen that downward break. I'll be posting that chart again today, so you will be able to see it. So I've posted it and discussed it. But we are seeing a number of people scrambling to the exits to get out of this market. Now, if global GDP growth is going to pick up later this year, sporadically, slowly, isn't going to be any great surge. But if it is going to pick up, and particularly if the United States economy is going to edge upwards, albeit probably erratically, to a somewhat higher growth rate over the next 12 months, then we're not going to see the bond market retest its lows. If you look at the charts today, it looks like they're breaking up or have broken up out of type 3 base formations. We've seen similar action and bigger rallies during the long decline in the long-term charts for the U.S. Treasury yields. But of course, this move to the upside is coming from a lower level, and when there are really good reasons for believing that the Fed may have completed the major portion of its overall quantitative easing program. So I think this is a dangerous market. I think it's overcrowded, highly over-leveraged, and the obvious common sense point is you don't get a 30-year plus bull market without some significant disruption when that finally ends. And so I do feel that we will see long-dated government bond yields actually rising. It depends a lot on how strong the growth is, also what the inflation outlook is. Today, the growth is soft, the inflation is low, but we've already seen a significant move upwards. For instance, USGG 10YR, as I type this code in, I just wanted to see exactly where this 10-year bond closed today. 2.53, that's the U.S. 10-year Treasury yield, 2.53 today, and that's come up. It was just above, the yield was just above 1.6, looks like it was 1.615 up to 2.53. So you see how fast this has actually moved. And if we get back to anything close to a more normal growth rate in an expanding global economy, we'll see this bond yield up in a 4% to 6% range. That's where I feel that it's going eventually, although I don't think it's going to get there quickly. It'll probably get there over the next over the next few years. So this remains a dangerous area. It is somewhat overbought here in the short term, but the big move, oversold, I think, is the more appropriate way to describe that. I'm looking at the rising yield, definitely. Short term, a little bit oversold. But the big move over the next few years will be money flowing out of these long-dated government bonds. So in other words, yields actually rising. And it's a dangerous market overall, and thus our preference for equities by a large margin. And we have seen pretty well all long-dated government bond markets come down to these artificially low yields And so they can move a long way to the upside over the next number of years. Now, moving on to currencies, our view is that the U.S. dollar is slowly building a base formation. And with people with long memories and lots of experience in markets, you know, the dollar has been in an overall bear cycle for far more years than it's been appreciating. But I think certainly the U.S. dollar is not expensive. It is range bound. Currencies are so often range bound, and the dollar's bases tend to take several years to form. But we think that it is forming a base, A, because it's starting from a relatively cheap level after the previous many years of an overall downward bias, but also because the U.S. economy has two major self-made advantages, and one is its competitive energy prices, thanks to its having developed and enthusiastically utilized its fracking technology. And second, because while in recent years, gosh, over the last decade or more, people have fretted about the U.S. losing rather its technology edge, well, other countries are also have their own technological development programs. But cut to the chase here, the U.S. is still in the pole position, and if anything, its technology lead has picked up over the last few years. And that's going to be a huge driver in terms of GDP growth, particularly as we have an accelerated rate of technological advances underway. And so with cheap energy and remaining the technological leader and with the most global autonomies among its corporate sector, that's going to put the U.S. overall into a good, strong global competitive position, as we have been seeing. Now, Asian currencies have often been a strong sector over the last number of years, at least the last decade or more. But we've seen those gains, for the most part, eroded, particularly this year. The most dramatic erosion, of course, has been the Japanese yen, which finally we've had a change of BOJ, Bank of Japan leadership, brought on by Shinzo Abe. And as you know, Japan's going flat out in its reflationary efforts, and it wanted to push the yen down to a more reasonable level because the yen has been secularly seriously strong for a very, very long time, and that's really been like a continuous water torture for the Japanese economy and not least its corporate sector over decades. So that's changed. And we have a weaker yen, and I think that it will weaken somewhat further in the years ahead. But the weakness of the Japanese yen and the slowdown in global conditions that has concentrated minds in a number of other Asian countries, and they have or they are now allowing or encouraging their own currencies to weaken somewhat. They were not doing that earlier on because their growth rates were sufficient that they were concerned about inflationary pressures, particularly when commodity prices were high. Well, commodity prices are soft generally, and global GDP growth is certainly softer, and Japan's position has become more competitive as a result of its devaluation. So most other Asian countries are happy to see their currencies weaken from the levels that we had seen earlier this year. And I think that's a process that's likely to continue. The holdout so far has been China, which seems happy to allow its currency It's actually outperformed the US dollar this year, and but if China's growth picks up, then that will not be a problem. But if China's growth does soften further, then I think that they may well allow their currency to weaken a little bit further as well. But they're not trying to do that at this stage, judging from the action that we're seeing in the markets. Now, elsewhere, resources producers, they've got softer currencies. We have, for the most part, we have an environment where currencies are much more concerned about ensuring that their countries are far more concerned about ensuring that their currencies do not appreciate. They're far more worried about that than the possibility of a currency actually being too weak, for the most part. Okay. What about the commodity markets overall? Well, I described them as being soft generally, and there are two messages that spring out immediately. One is that global GDP growth is not very robust. That's always the case when commodity markets are in lengthy lulls. And that also means that, so that's the bearish factor. GDP growth is soft. The longer term bullish point is that it lowers inflationary pressures, and softer commodity prices are a precondition for the next round of global GDP growth expansion, which is lies ahead of us. 2014 at the earliest, I would say. Now, this includes energy prices, which, while they were firm earlier this month, they have fallen back quite sharply with the setback in stock markets and a lot of the deleveraging that we've actually seen in markets. As I say, this was not a rotation process from one asset class to another. This was just taking money off the table. And that is going to continue a little further, as I've already mentioned. And that money off the table will help to fuel the next rallies and the next next recovery. But getting back to the commodities and energy prices here generally, today, for instance, we've got the Brent crude oil. That's by far the most important one. That's down to 101. And the US WTI is 93, a little over 93 and a half. So it's not cheap, but it's not a problem here either. And I think energy is one of the areas where we do feel that we will see lower prices in real terms for the most part over the next decade. You always get aberrations in the markets and temporary spikes based on political developments or accidents and so on. But the overall trend for energy, we feel on a longer term basis, will be for cheaper energy costs in real terms, or at least I'll put it this way, they're available for those countries which are able to and willing to and have the foresight to take advantage of the situation. The U.S. has certainly done that. Europe has not, because Europe decided that it wanted to go entirely green or heavily green, and you pay a big front-end price for that. And so Europe has far higher energy costs than we see in the United States. So does Asia. I think Asia is going to be more practical, not least China, in developing not only their green technologies, and that's all to the good, but also in developing their nuclear technology and also in developing their fracking technology, not least in terms of gas, natural gas, which has approximately half the CO2 emissions of coal. So it's a good switch. And I think that an era ahead, by the end of this decade, we will be out of the danger period for sustained spikes in energy prices. And that's something that many people didn't believe would ever happen. If you go back to the 1990s and the 2000s, people were living in fear that we were going to be put into a severe and unrelenting recession as a result of significant energy shortages and huge spikes in price. Well, it's not going to happen. And we've seen a fascinating and encouraging cycle here in terms of technological advances and developments of new energy technologies, both in fossil fuels, particularly the fracking technology, and also in development of renewable energy policies, which will put us in good stead for the very long-term future. And food prices, have some tricky weather conditions here in terms of crops overall, but with a little luck, we won't get flooded out this year. Last year and several years before, as you know, the problem was mainly one of drought, whether it was in China or whether it was in Europe or whether it was in the United States, particularly in the Texas region of the United States. Today, it's pretty much a case of too much liquidity overall, but that's probably less damaging than the drought, and so hopefully we will get through this year with a less tight situation in terms of staple grain and bean supplies, and that would be another plus point for the global economy overall. Okay, in terms of markets, expect more choppy action, more turbulence for a number of months. That's not it'll be frightening from time to time, as I said at the beginning, convulsive, turbulent market action overall. But this is not a bad time. Keep your nerve. Buy when shares are depressed, and lighten when you see overextensions to the upside. And all the very best to all of you. Have a terrific weekend.